Welcome back to another MiningStockEducation.com expert interview. I'm Bill Powers, your host. Today's topic of discussion will be regarding investing in gold optionality plays. With me on the line to offer his insights is returning guest and professional mining stock investor Don Durrett of GoldStockData.com. Don's been investing in mining stocks since the early 1990s. He's the author of the book How to Invest in Gold and Silver, a complete guide with a focus on mining stocks, which conveys Don's well-thought-out and tried approach to mining stock investing. Don, thanks for coming back on the program to share your insights with us.
Thanks for having me back, Bill.
So, Don, the topic of optionality is one that I've heard many people recently speak about, especially as many believe we're about 18 months back into an upcycle in gold. Could you begin by sharing how you define a gold optionality play? And also, how would you compare or contrast the financial instrument of an option versus what we call a gold optionality play?
Okay, let's kind of start off with the second question about comparing and contrasting options, and then we'll go to how I look at optionality plays. So the similarity, I mean, I guess that's the reason why they call them optionality plays, is there's some similarities with options in that options have high risk, high reward. So a lot of times if you do a call option, you're wanting the price of the shares to go up. And so you're looking out into the future and you're trying to kind of project out. And a lot of times these options are not in the money yet. So you're waiting for the options to get in the money so that you can go up and you can make a lot of money. So there's a lot of risk. There's a lot of an optionality play in a mining stock. Sometimes you have like a low grade project or non-economic project or project that hasn't been financed yet. So you're kind of looking out in the future and you're projecting out and you're saying, I think that that's going to eventually get in the money, if you will. So when you're doing options, it's all about getting in the money and then having a lot of leverage. So it's basically a very high risk, high return type of situation with options. And it's the same in the mining shares. And that's when someone starts saying about an optionality play, it usually is going to be a high risk, high reward situation. So now how I kind of define what an optionality play is I'm looking at gold in the ground or silver in the ground that's kind of significant. In other words, they have a lot of it. So we're looking at flagship properties. You can look at an optionality play on a small deposit if you want to, if it's really cheap. So you're looking at gold in the ground is very inexpensive. And you're projecting out and you're saying, if I invest in that today, eventually that gold and silver is going to get repriced. So you're looking at that reprice situation. So you're looking for the price of gold and silver to increase so it gets repriced. So you have to identify these miners, these companies, and you have to identify the projects and you have to kind of look under the covers and then you have to kind of use your intuition and project out, will it get repriced? And which projects are the best ones to get repriced? So this is something that takes time to do. I don't think anybody can really understand how to invest in an optionality play unless they've done this for at least 2 years. It's just too complicated.
You mentioned flagship properties is one of the key things you look at, and I know that from reading your book. What are some of the other key things that, you know, must have things in a company that you see first before you would invest in an optionality play?
So you have to look at all the factors. That's why I said it's complicated, and that's why I said it takes time to learn. So you have to know what to look at. So when you start looking at projects or these optionality plays, so the first thing I kind of look at is if I see a company that has a big deposit. So if they have a big deposit, so for a flagship, I'm looking for 2 million plus ounces of gold or 40 million plus ounces of silver. So if I find a company that has one of these projects, so-called flagship projects, then I start looking for, and they're really, really cheap. So let's say the gold in the ground is being valued at, say, $25 an ounce or less, and the silver in the ground is, you know, $2 or less per ounce. So the investors are ignoring the stock for a reason. And so you have to say, okay, at what point in time will investors change their mind? Will all it take is the price of gold and silver to go up? Will that be enough? And if it is, I mean, those are the ones that you kind of really, those are the ones I kind of look for. So which companies are really going to react to the price of gold and silver? So the first thing it's going to be is kind of the location. So there's like red flags that investors are looking at, and location is kind of a really important one. You really don't want to the better optionality plays are, you know, for instance, in Canada in a mining district, or in Australia in a mining district, or perhaps, you know, possibly Mexico. It's another one people are, you know, don't have a lot of fear around, and the U.S. to a certain extent. So it's in a decent location, and then you have to look at the other factors. So what is the grade, for instance? So a lot of people, they don't like these optionality plays because they have low grade. I mean, that's the reason why they haven't been developed yet. If it had a high grade, it would be economic already. It would all be developed. So you have to look at the grade, and then you have to kind of decide, you know, is that grade just too low? Is it, you know? And then you have to look at, in addition to the grade, what are the additional ores that are with it? So kind of the base metals, the offsets. So I don't particularly like some of these optionality plays that kind of are dependent on copper, for instance. So I like the, you know, and then you have to look at how much it's going to cost. What's the CapEx? I don't particularly like really big CapEx projects. So once you get over $1 billion, those big CapEx projects are really difficult. Well, they're going to be big, right? So it's going to be tough to permit them. It's going to take a long time to permit them. I don't really want to wait, you know, a five-year permitting process. So these $1 billion-plus optionality plays, you're really not going to get paid off in a big way until they get into production. So, you know, the really large CapEx projects. Another important number is, you know, the path to production. You know, does the company have a path to production? What is that path? You know, how, for instance, how far along are they in the documentation process and the permitting process? You know, do they have a PEA yet? Do they have a, you know, a pre-feasibility or even a feasibility? How far along are they in the documentation process? Are they getting closer and closer to production? And then management. Management's very important. So management is, are they giving you guidance for that path to production? So I like optionality plays where I'm getting good execution from management, and I'm seeing progress, and I'm getting guidance. Those are kind of the important factors. And then once you get a PEA, a preliminary economic assessment, you can look at the IRR. So the IRR is important. You know, I really don't want to do an optionality play if the IRR for $1,300 gold is only 15%. I mean, yes, at one point in time, when the price of gold goes higher, it'll probably get built, but your cash flow is going to be somewhat limited. So, especially if it's below 15%, then it's kind of you really don't want to chase that project.
Don, some of the more popular gold optionality plays that are out there, those CEOs seem to be employing what Rick Rule refers to as hoarding, getting properties, and then just sitting on them, not drilling, not developing them. And when I've looked into a number of these potential optionality plays, when I looked at their 43-101 resources, the overwhelming majority of their gold was in the inferred category, which, you know, is the least reliable, widely spaced drill holes. What is your thoughts about investing in gold optionality plays where they're not developing, they're not moving towards a PEA or pre-feasibility, and the majority of the gold that they've identified is in the inferred category, which is far from being determined if it could potentially be economic or not?
So there's really two companies that kind of fit in that. One of them is First Mining Finance, and the other one is Gold Mining Inc. And so those are the two companies that have been kind of collecting projects. And those companies, I own both of them, but I'm not excited about them because I don't know how they're going to monetize their projects. But at a certain point, I like the fact that they own gold in the ground really cheap. Yes, some of them are going to have to convert the inferred to measured and indicated at some point in time. But my concern about those plays, I do like gold mining because they have 18 million ounces of gold, and they paid they just are great deal makers. I mean, every project they bought on sale, basically. They have some really, really good projects, especially once gold goes to, you know, 1600, 1700. It's I don't know how they're going to monetize the projects. That's the one thing I said, a path to production. What's the path to production of the projects? So optionality plays, those aren't my favorite ones per se. Another one, some of the your project developers, your exploration companies, they can be looked at. You know, for instance, Seabridge Gold is, you know, sitting on a lot of gold in the ground, but I don't particularly like those type of optionality plays, and a lot of people do. Another one, International Tower Hill Mine. People like, you know, these companies that have a lot of gold in the ground. Whereas I focus, the ones that I really like are more of a company that's kind of close, that's kind of has a path to production, and it's, once they're ready. Once the price of gold goes up, they're ready to go forward and they're ready to develop. For instance, two examples is Sand Spring Resources. They have a 7 million ounce project down in Guyana and in northern South America, which I think is a pretty good location. And Guyana Gold just built a project down there. And so Sand Spring is kind of the next guy in line, but their project isn't really economic at $1,300 gold because it's kind of a big project. But boy, once you get to $1,500 gold, they'll be able to finance it and they'll go forward fairly quickly. The other one is Vista Gold, and they have pretty much about the same size project. There's a $6.5 million, and they're also ready to go forward, but they just need gold prices to get a little bit higher. So these are projects that kind of have a path to production. They're just waiting. Whereas some of these companies, you know, First Mining Finance and Gold Mining Inc., you know, we don't know exactly what they're going to do. So I got into First Mining Finance kind of indirectly because they just kept buying up stocks that I owned. I think they bought three companies that I owned. I don't think I've bought in shares directly from them, but I have a it's all. And then Gold Mining Inc., I owned them, and then they bought two companies that I had, so my shares just increased. So I never bought them as optionality plays, is my point.
For some of those companies that you mentioned that are in that waiting period, they're close to production within a few years once the gold price rises. When you research those companies, did the management take lesser salaries considering the, you know, the company's not progressing right now? And were the companies still drilling, or did they even turn off the drills to save money, lower their salaries? What were the drills and the management doing with those companies?
A lot of people have said that, you know, Sand Spring has kind of been sitting on their heels. You know, they haven't done a whole lot. But they have a new discovery. So they have done drilling and they have a new discovery. And the stock kind of bounced a little bit after they released those drill results. But they haven't been aggressively spending money. They've been drilling a little bit, but they do have a second discovery, which is good. Vista Gold is kind of batting down the hatches per se. They haven't really done a lot of exploration. They're kind of in the waiting mode. You can't get too aggressive because and this is good. This is actually positive because the more aggressive that you get when you're not developing a project, the more you're going to go, the more you're going to spend. So you're going to kind of burn through your cash and you're going to dilute your shares. So I really like, from my perspective, I mean, once you get all the way to a feasibility study, and your project isn't economic, you need to sit on it. You need to sit on it and just wait. You know, Spanish Mountains is a good example of that. They've just been sitting on their project and just waiting. Victoria Gold, they were an optionality play, and then they they finally kind of went forward, and now they're going to develop their mine. And Midas Gold is kind of an optionality play, and they're slowly making progress. They have a big project in Idaho. So you have the one thing about some of these optionality plays is that they can get taken over. So you invest in them and you're kind of waiting for to get a really, you know, good return, and then they get taken over and you get 40%. You know, you wanted 500%, you didn't want 40%. But that just goes with the neighborhood of investing in mining stocks. A lot of these companies get taken out.
Yeah, what you just voiced there, Don, I've been re-flipping through your book on mining stock investing the last couple weeks with my morning coffee, and that was one of the things that stuck out to me. Many people look to see if a junior is a takeover candidate before they invest, and one of the things that came across in your book was that you don't like when they're taken over, because it's almost like you feel a lot of the upside was taken from you, and when you assess the company in the beginning, you didn't get your full expected return of where you thought that company could end up.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to want to get taken over by, unless the companies are comparable. I'll give you an example. Last week, Endeavor Mining, who has a market cap of $1.6 billion, bought out Avnel Mining, and they had a project in West Africa, and it's a 2 million ounce project going towards production. Avnel had a market cap of $60 million. So you got less than 10%. So your shares just shrunk by 90%, and Endeavor is only going to be a 2 or 3 bagger, whereas Avnel is a 10 bagger. So, I mean, and you see those all the time, and it's very frustrating when companies, it's all about the companies are buying you out, especially as right now we're not at the bottom of the market, but we're down significantly. And so anybody that gets bought out at these prices is selling their company on sale. And especially the gold in the ground. You really don't want to sell your gold for less than $50 an ounce. You know, it costs $30 an ounce to find a mine, and you want a profit, so you shouldn't be selling your gold for less than $50. And ideally, you want to sell your gold in the ground for $100 or $150. And so I don't have the numbers exactly what Avnel sold for, but, you know, it was well under $50 an ounce. And so from that perspective, you know, I don't see why people would get excited about a 40% or a 50% return when we're talking about mining stocks. Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of Allen Iverson's comment. You know, he said, we're talking about practice. You know, what we're talking about, mining stocks. I mean, mining stocks, one of the most risky sectors you can invest in. If you're not in mining stocks to make big gains, what in the world are you doing here? And so to be excited about a 40% gain is, you know, kind of silly. You can make 40% in a week in a mining stock, definitely 40% in a month. And so to get excited, and then that's just the beginning, right? That's just the starter. I mean, you make 40% in a week, 40% in a month. That's just the starter. Then it can go up, you know, from there. So takeovers are awful. They're ugly. The only time a takeover – you always want to be the buyer. You don't want to be the seller. And so if you own a company that's selling their company, you just cross your fingers and hope that the company that bought them out has a market cap, say, under a billion. You know, you just don't want you get taken out by companies that have one-plus billion market caps, because those companies don't have a lot of big returns. You're not looking at – you know, they're not going to be 10 baggers. Some of them will be, but – you know, that's not – the odds are different. So that's the reason why I'm waiting for, you know, shareholders to kind of – to rise up and say, quit giving my company away. Quit giving these, for instance, Avnel shareholders. It'll pass. They all go through. But my goodness, I mean, build that mine and give the shareholders their returns. Don't give the returns to Endeavor Mining.
Don, before you go, are there any concluding thoughts or advice you'd like to give listeners regarding investing in optionality plays or investing in the junior resource space in general?
First of all, I have an article on Seeking Alpha for my top 10 optionality plays. So if they go to Seeking Alpha and search by my name, they can see that. couple of things in my notes. The biggest risk with optionality plays. So there's kind of three risks. You know, you find a company that has, you know, kind of a lot of gold in the ground, a lot of silver in the ground, and they're really, really cheap. So kind of the biggest risk is the project doesn't get built. For instance, right now you have Northern Dynasty, and, you know, it ran up to $500 million, and people were really excited because it went from, I don't know, $70 million. No, I don't think it was that low. But it ran pretty good, and then it kind of got stuck at $500 million. And the reason why is because permitting. So some of these big projects, you know, they have to get permitted. So you want to make sure that your optionality probably has a good chance to get built. And the other risk is, since it's going to be a long time until these projects kind of pay off, is they can drop in value. So over time. And then the other one is that they can get taken out. So that's kind of my risk thing.
Do you have any recommendations for an entry point, considering the volatility of the junior sector? Do you have any advice on how to enter one of these optionality plays?
What I do is I look at when I find one, I look at the chart and see if it's a good entry price. You know, for instance, going back to Northern Dynasty, I mean, it made a big run, so. It's like once you see that a company is no longer cheaper, it's made a big run. Another example is kind of Novo Resources. They recently jumped to $300 million, so it's not really a good entry price. I mean, if you look at its chart, a good entry price is when it was sub $100 million. So you want to make sure that you get a good entry price. You don't really want to overbuy, so you have to be kind of patient. And look for these stocks that have, you know, kind of, they haven't made their run yet. So I don't like to buy stocks over 150 million. No, I say I don't like to, but I do. I do quite a bit. So I like to find them before they've jumped over that kind of that threshold. So, you know, between 50 million and 150 million, that's kind of the sweet spot. I write about that in my Seeking Alpha. That's kind of the sweet spot that I look for. So you're kind of looking for companies that have good projects and they haven't taken off yet. You kind of want to get them early. You know, if you talk to people that have made good money in mining stocks, they will tell you that one of the keys was getting in early and getting a good entry price. So you have to look. Kind of look at and decide, you know, am I comfortable at this entry price? Is it a good one or not? Or do I need to be patient? Or did I miss it? Sometimes you just kind of have to tell yourself, I missed this one. I'm going to wait for the next one.
Could you share again your website and what you offer for listeners if they haven't been introduced to your website?
My website is goldstockdata.com. And the website has 720. It has a large database of 725 companies in it, and we also have a forum which provides data. So you get data from the database, and you get data from the forum. Plus, I personally analyze every stock, and I put a little half page analysis of each stock. So you get analysis and data. So it provides a lot of value. The other thing that's really nice about it is if you have a portfolio of gold and silver mining stocks, say if you own more than five of them, it's really good at tracking those stocks. So you just come in there and you can create your own portfolio, and you can search by your portfolio, and there's just a lot of links. It's just really, really handy for tracking your portfolio or tracking your stocks or following your stocks.
Dan, I appreciate you joining me again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.